What's good, y'all? It's that time of the year, and we've got bills to pay. So if you enjoy listening to the show, hit the links in the description to support by donating, joining our Patreon, or buying some new merch. If about 10% of you listening right now donate $10 to support the show, we'd have enough to cover an entire year's worth of cost of production. Over the years, I've been very intentional about turning down ads for things that didn't align with our values, so you don't have to listen to us talk about gambling or boner pills or any of that other crap. But that's only possible through the support of you, our listeners. So we've created some new ways for you to support, and again, if you enjoy listening to the show, hit the links in the description to support by donating, joining our Patreon, or buying some of our new merch. And of course, don't forget to tell someone you like their kicks today. You never know how far a compliment will take you, and we all know how good it feels to be on the receiving end of some appreciation. Now let's get into today's show.
Welcome to the Exhaust Notes Podcast.
What is good, everyone? Welcome to Exhaust Notes Formula One Podcast. Hopefully you can hear me as I'm adjusting my mic. Your favorite Formula One podcaster's favorite podcast. Your favorite temporary resident of Maui's favorite podcast, Rohit Malhotra. And, also, Todd and I's favorite Formula One podcast, if we're being honest. But
yes,
first time probably ever that we're running the two-man show on the pod. Rohit's on vacation, and we decided Yuki being promoted to Red Bull was just too good of an opportunity to pass up talking about, personally, like one of my favorite drivers, like just ever so slightly behind Lando Norris. But how about you, Todd?
Yeah, like I think it's pretty well known that we're all pretty big Yuki stands around here. Just his like little brother energy he had with Pierre when he came onto the grid. Like, it's just been, he's been a character since, like all of his kind of outbursts on the radio, and then just being such like a gentle giant when he's out of the car. Or not gentle giant.
Gentle shorty, perhaps?
Yeah. Shorty. Shorty.
Shouty. I don't know, man. He's, I say all that, but like Lewis is still right up there too. Those are like, just the three of those guys are like leaps and bounds above everybody else on the grid for me. Only because Gunther Steiner's not on the grid anymore in any form. So
yeah,
he'd be up there as well. But I think, you know, we talked about it in the last episode, but I think it's partially like complete and utter bullshit that they're putting Yuki in this spot. It's also complete and utter bullshit that they did this to Liam Lawson, who, you know, like we talked about before, two races is not enough to give somebody an actual chance at taking on, you know, what is potentially like the fastest car on the grid, right? So I'm kind of curious, like, what you think about that. And then we'll get into some of the back and forth of, you know, comparing Max's co-driver or Max's, you know, second driver along the way, Yuki's performance against other drivers, all that kind of stuff. But what do you think? How's this going to play out for Yuki?
Yeah. So I kind of like, we talked about this when the news broke, and I was kind of on the same page as that, is like, oh man, Ryuki's getting screwed here. He's getting, you know, thrown to the wolves, and it's just setting him up for failure, just like they did with Lawson, just like they did with all the previous second drivers. Maybe not Checo. He got a big enough chance, I think. But actually, I kind of changed my mind on that, because like if he does go in and, you know, like shit the bed, so to speak, is it really that much worse than Lawson in P20? Right, so if he goes in and he struggles with this car because he's not Max, and basically everyone is not Max, it doesn't, like, in my mind, weigh heavily negatively against Yuki, because he's been here for 5 years, and as we'll get into later, he's proven his talents. So if he goes there and struggles, it's just like shows that the Red Bull is that much of a kind of a shit car for everybody else that isn't Max. Like, Max is kind of willing it into being competitive amongst the top four, but you put any other driver in there, doesn't matter if it's Lewis, if it's Fernando, these other drivers that we rate really highly, they're going to struggle. And I think it's just Max has, one, he likes a car that's kind of on a knife edge anyway, but this one is so much so that even Max is struggling, and you can see that so far. So I don't see it as a negative. How do you think they're really setting up Yuki to just get eaten by the wolves?
I think they've already been super disrespectful to Yuki, right?
Like, oh, absolutely.
I mean, he has, I don't know, like you said, I think this is his fifth year. He's probably got 90 starts
under his belt, roughly. I don't think he's hit 100 races yet, but he's got to be getting close to it. And for me, the fact that you're giving all these other guys the chance before him, when in theory, like, he should have been the next person in that seat. You know, he should have. And yes, like, maybe it will work out to his benefit that he has more driving under his belt now and he'll do better in this car. I hope he comes out and dominates. I hope that he, like, gets in this car and is the ultimate magical, like, whatever, and he just wins. Like, that would be amazing. It's not
Max something on pace.
It's like, I'm not expecting that, but I will 100% be rooting for Yuki to like literally get his first win, you know, in Japan, because it bugs me that the, you know, I don't want to keep calling Helmut Marko a racist, but like, what is it if it's not, right? Like, look at the guys who have been in that car and look at the words that have come out of his mouth for the last 10 years. And it's shitty that, like, you know, we talked about, you know, offline a little bit. Honda's paying $10 million a year for Yuki to be in Racing Bulls, a V-carb seat. Are any other drivers paying $10 million a year to be in that seat? I don't know that any drivers are paying that much to have a seat. And Yuki is by far better than at least half the grid right now. Like, there shouldn't be that fee, in my opinion. I get that, like, it's the business of Formula One and that those things happen. But it's kind of like, if he's been paying that $10 million and they've still been not giving him the chance at the Red Bull car, one, is there monetary exchange going on behind the scenes for him to be at Red Bull now? Or is it just finally that, you know, they know that the underlying positioning of these drivers and the underlying drive for all of this is Max, right? Max is unhappy with the car. Max is unhappy with not having a competitive driver to keep the Red Bull team in the top three, because he has an out clause in his contract, right? Doesn't he? Like, he can get out if the team doesn't finish in the top four or five or something. So, like, if that happens again, then Red Bull's hitting the panic button right now. So if that happens again and Max is, you know, Toto Wolff's in his ear telling him to come to Mercedes, because George isn't under contract next year, I don't think. Like, there's a lot of things underlying that have made this push, which I get that's all the politics of racing. We talk about it every episode of the show. But of all the people who seem to have earned the respect of the rest of the grid, outbursts from his rookie year all the way through, Yuki has been pretty solid the last couple of years compared to all the other drivers that were in that Red Bull seat. We both love Ricardo. He's out of Formula One. Pierre Gasly has some good races, but, like, I don't think he's improved on our list of, like, you know, moving up the driver hierarchy over the last two seasons. I don't see him doing well this year. Who else was in that? Oh, Alex Albon is obviously, like, one of the ones doing better, but it took him being basically booted out of Formula One for a season, reserve driver, all that stuff. And, like, you get a little bit different of a motivation when you literally lose your job as a Formula One driver. So it's kind of hard to compare all those things. But at the end of the day, it just feels like, all those things said, Yuki should have had this opportunity way earlier. And it seems like, whether, I mean, Max has already discussed being unhappy with Yuki as a second driver, so it seems like it's really just like Red Bull is kind of like stressing right now, and that's why the knee-jerk reaction of, like, only two races in and they're going to make this drastic move. Hopefully it works out, because I'm rooting for Yuki, you know, even if it means Red Bull is more competitive with McLaren and Lewis and Ferrari. I'd rather see Yuki get this opportunity and succeed than not, but I do feel kind of bitter about it all at the same time.
Yeah, that makes sense. And, like, going back to something you said super early on there, like, it's been pretty well, not documented, but rumored previously that Honda was paying about $10 million a year to have Yuki in Racing Bulls or Red Bull family, whatever. But why still? Like, he's been there and he's proven himself. So at this point, why are they still having to pay to keep Yuki there? He's proven himself to be an asset to the team. Maybe not the senior team or whatever, but absolutely on the junior team. So why is it still? And then we kind of talked about this when we tried to record the other day, that Kim Illman alluded to the fact that they might be paying an additional $10 million or so to get Yuki into the first team, which is, like, what else are they going to do? Like, Lawson, you know, kind of, I don't think to no fault of his own, like, isn't cutting it, but it was unfair to have him cut after two races, which I think we both agree on. But, like, what else are they going to do? They're just going to... What, are they going to dump Yuki in two races time and then dump Isaac Hajir two races after that? Or are they going to, you know, like...
Yeah,
pull the strings back to get Albon back in from Williams somehow.
I mean, and Isaac's been driving great. Like, I hope this doesn't cut into his, you know, trajectory, right? Like, that's kind of the like snowball effect of all these changes, in my opinion, right? Like, it doesn't necessarily surprise me that changes are being made. It surprises me that they're so early. Like you said about the financials, right? Like, Yuki deserves a seat in Formula One. I don't think that there are too many people that would argue against him being one of the 20 best drivers in the world. Like, do you, like, I mean, the other thing we should mention is that he's not even, I think he turns 25 like next month, right? Like, so he's still super young, you know, like he's not, you know, Kimi Antonelli, you know, young at this point. Cause he has, like I said, almost 100 races under his belt, but like, he still has a huge career in front of him. It really feels, you know, I'm biased because I'm a super fan of Honda as a brand and everything off of the racetrack. But like, it feels like for some reason, Red Bull is like, Yuki only matters because we have the Honda engine partnership. And like, that's why we're allowing you to pay to be in this seat. But like, that doesn't, like, I get that you would want to have a Japanese driver alongside of a Japanese engine builder. It totally makes sense, right? Like, that's the perfect scenario for any, you know, brand to have like an ambassador that can be front and center and be the face of the brand around the country. Like, we would love to have that. If that's why, as sad as it is, you know, NASCAR is so popular in America, right? Like, people can get behind, you know, Dale Earnhardt in a Chevy or so-and-so in a, you know, Ford or whatever that is. And like, that sucks that it's being forced on Formula One, in my opinion, versus like just having the natural kind of competitive nature of all these drivers. I also don't know all the financials of all these drivers. There's probably plenty of people that are paying to be in seats, and you know, Lance Stroll obviously doesn't have to pay much to be in that seat.
Well, he did, but that's a good example. Like, to, when he
like
got
with
in
with Dad there, right now it's like, oh, I'm not. It's just a part of the hierarchy or whatever.
Yeah, and they we've known a bunch of drivers in recent history that have paid to get their way into Formula One. Like Checo, for example, just recently was a gigantic. I think it was, he was like somehow related to or close personal friends with Carlos Slim, who was like the Telcel, whatever, big cellular company, boss billionaire out of Mexico. And he was basically funding Checo's racing career to be in, to get him into that seat in the first place. So yeah, it's like just the way the F1 works at this point. But at this point, why, like, you don't see these other well-established drivers, like Fernando's not paying to be on the grid, right?
Yeah.
Like, sure, he probably brings sponsorship dollars in, but also he's getting a paycheck.
Yep. And honestly, like, I mean, that's a red hot question, maybe, but like, would you rather have Fernando at this age or Yuki at this age? Like, both of those guys are right about the same pace in the last like year or so. We obviously like both, we both love Alonso as well, but like, I don't know, like, if I'm building a team, I'd rather have the young guy that could potentially be there for a few years and see the team grow versus having the guy who, you know, he's there to end his career, basically. You know, like, I know he wants to drive for the rest of his life, but like, I don't think anybody sees him moving on past this stint with Aston Martin.
I mean, okay, like, if we're being real, like, I'd take Alonso just for the fireworks. Just for the fireworks, because he would tell Dr. Helmet to kick rocks. Like, that would be the best thing ever.
That would be entertaining.
And him just freaking out about the car in the car, like, on public broadcast.
Yeah.
Would be so much fun. Yuki's, unfortunately, knows better and probably will know better than to say, like, oh, this car's shit. Like,
yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, like,
so the other things that were interesting about this, like, other than just the timing, is, like, I'm sure you saw all the reports basically were like, Liam Lawson found out about this on social media. They didn't even tell him. And literally, like, right after the race last week, Christian Horner was saying, well, we've got to protect Liam and his growth and all of that stuff. Like, making it sound like they were trying to be polite with him about all this stuff. And like, I don't know if it was necessarily like a choice to not tell him, because allegedly there was a journalist from a pretty small, I forget where, but a pretty small, where's Red Bull from again? Where's their base at?
Austria,
like an Austrian journalist came, like ran with a story or something. And then it like kind of spilled out from there and everybody sourced this person or whatever. And obviously if it's true, then they have to kind of acknowledge it at some point, because I think Formula One PR is a weird situation for all those people. But I just thought it was really weird that like you wouldn't let him know ahead of time, even just a text message or a quick phone call, you know, be like, hey, I want to get a hold of you before you're on Instagram or Twitter or whatever it is. Cause man, that's gotta be just like heartbreaking.
You have to like, but as a Red Bull driver, just in the Red Bull Academy, you kind of have to know how, like, granted, this is extreme. This is the shortest stint a Red Bull driver's ever had, but you know how flippant they are with drivers in general, and have proven to be so. Like, how many teammates has Max been through it since, let's start, like, going back to even pre-Danny was what, Kvyat? Danny was first, and then Kvyat, and then Albon, and then Gasly, and then, like, there's been a bunch.
No, Carlos, right? Sainz.
No, they were Toro Rosso together.
Oh, you're meaning just Red Bull? Yeah.
Yeah, just since he got to the first team. But the point being, I feel like the writing was a little bit on the wall there, especially with some of Horner's comments that said that they're definitely taking a look after that race and that performance. He said that they were definitely taking a look at all their options. I feel like that's like you're getting replaced. Like, you might as well take that as stamp it, right? Because the way he talked about Checo through all of Checo's struggles was like, the only time it ever kind of got serious was like his comments after the summer break last year, when there was like all the rumors that like, oh, Danny Ric's coming back, and I was giddy, and there was a lot of that. That was the only one where he was kind of almost like totally fit, like riding the fence and not really positive or negative one way or the other. So I don't know. That it just felt like it was going to happen, and then that rumor, like you said, just kind of picked up steam. And then there was kind of a weird lull, going to your point about F1 journalism. There was like, oh, it's pretty much confirmed by everyone at this point, except for F1 themselves and Red Bull. And then they finally announced it. But for them to not tell him ahead of time is pretty shit. Like,
yeah, I mean, but I just feel for the guy.
They just screwed Daniel over last year after Singapore, right?
Yeah. I mean, and you know, it's business, right? They're out to win and they're out to make money. And I understand, like, you've got to make those shitty decisions in all these, you know, ways. But it is kind of interesting too. Like, I think, like, had he even made it, you know, into the points, you know, in either of those races, you know, I think I don't think we're having this conversation, because I think if he scores any points, then the conversation shifts, and like, yeah, they're still going to watch him, but to force him out, you know, they're not going to make that decision. How do I say this? The influence of the Japanese Grand Prix happening, you know, as the next race, was probably, you know, at least 30-50% of the decision being made, right? Because it's like, no points, no real like bright side to any of his two races. Yuki and the money they're going to make from putting him in the top car, also going to have the you know, like the white livery, which is like, you know, I know you and I both love, like, and I'm pretty sure every Honda fan out there and every Red Bull fan, when they go to Japan and do the white livery, is like, this is the way it should be. You know, I know that they got to keep the branding for the sake of Max and his, like, you know, long winning streak here that he's got going, but that white livery just looks so good, and it stands out on the track, especially over the last few years, because none of the other cars have any real, you know, like, in your face liveries, like, you know, that one stands out against all the rest. I mean, so it's a, I don't know, man. I'm excited about it. I'm excited to see Yuki drive in the big car, in the, you know, the big boy car, let's say. But I hope that it doesn't derail his career the way that seat seems to have taken everybody else out.
Yeah, I feel like, I don't know, I feel more nervous than excited about that because, like we talked about, like we both really love Yuki and his antics and just like the character that he is. And he's got a lot of personality for a Formula One driver when not many do, I guess. Or I don't know, they all seem like kind of calculated or however prim and proper and whatever.
Yeah.
It's like George. Yeah. Like George is like, he knows he's trying to be a spokesperson for whatever at all times.
Yep.
Yuki's just kind of like a dude. Like he just is like, yeah, I want to like eat sushi and play video games and, you know, fart in a car and
same,
like,
bro, same.
Yeah, like that kind of stuff. So I'm more nervous because I think he could probably perform slightly better than Lawson, but I don't think he's going to light the world afire in a car that's
okay.
Because I feel like his tendencies, and again, this is just me speaking in an uneducated sense, he's like most of the other drivers that like a little bit of understeer in their car. That's more predictable for their like corner entry and braking and stuff. And the only one so far that seems to be able to handle the fact that the Red Bull will just like snap on you at any second is Max.
Yeah.
So I'm scared for him, basically. I really, really hope he like pulls some magic, at least in Suzuka. Just start off good. Just get in the points in Suzuka.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for too. I mean, I would love to see him just dominate, but like at very minimum, I just want to see him in the points and get that home crowd love that he deserves after all these years. So I sent you this earlier. I'm just going to scroll through and read them, but there's an interesting article on F1.com or Formula1.com about basically all the teammates that Max has had throughout his career and how they've fared against him. So I'm going to start from the beginning. Carlos Sainz and Toro Rosso, 2015, 19 races as teammates. In qualifying, Sainz beat Max 10-9. Racing head-to-head, Sainz had seven wins against each other, not wins. Max had 10. Points scored, Sainz had 18, 15th in the championship. Max had 49, 12th in the championship. Let's jump up. 2016, only four races as teammates. Max beat him 3-1 in qualifying. They were head-to-head. In head-to-head, they were 2-2. Points scored 4 for Sainz, 12th in the championship, 13 for Max, 5th in the championship. Danny Ric in 2016, 17 races as teammates, 11 qualifying victories for Danny Ric, 6 for Verstappen. Racing head-to-head, Danny Ric had 10 victories or 10 head-to-head wins versus 7 for Max. Danny Ricciardo, 220 points, 3rd in the championship. Max had 191 and 5th in the championship. Really kind of puts into perspective the choice that Danny Ric made to, you know, bet on himself and then fizzle out over the years that followed. But that's a episode we've already been over many times, sadly. 2017, Danny Ric again, 20 races as teammates, 7 for Ricciardo in qualifying, 13 for Max, 9 in head-to-head racing, 11 for Max, 200 points for Ricciardo, finished 5th in the championship. 168 points for Max, finished 6th in the championship. 9 podiums for Ricciardo, only 4 for Max. 1 win for Ricciardo, 2 for Max. 18 Ricciardo's, 7 in head-to-head, 14 for Max. Head-to-head racing, sorry, that was qualifying. 7 for Ricciardo, 14 for Max. 5 for Ricciardo, 14 in head-to-head racing. And this is kind of where Max just starts tearing everybody a new one. Ricciardo has 170 points, 61.9% of races finished in the points, 6th in the championship. Max had 249, 81% of races finished in the points, 4th in the championship. Podiums, Ricciardo had 2 and Max had 11. 2019, Pierre Gasly raced with him for 12 races. He only beat him in qualifying one time, and he only beat him on the racetrack one time. Max finished 3rd in the championship. Gasly finished 7th in the championship. Alex Albon, only 9 races against each other as teammates. Albon only out-qualified Max one time. In racing, though, Albon beat Max 4 times to Max beating Albon 5 times. So that's kind of an interesting one and kind of almost says where he is, almost explains where Albon is today even. But that was 2019. Albon finished eighth in the championship. Max finished third. And then obviously getting into 2020 and beyond, you know, Max just continues to dominate. 17 times he beat Albon out of all 17 races in qualifying. 15 of the races he beat Albon. Checo, oh man. Unfortunately, Checo just didn't ever live up to it. Qualifying, Perez had two times where he beat Max out of 22 races, and then three times on the track out of 22. That was Max's first title in 2021, and Checo finished fourth. Then Checo finished, third? Only beat Max in five of the 22 races in 2022. Only beat Max head-to-head in two of the races in 2023. But he did finish second in the championship. And then, obviously, last year was pretty rough for Checo. He only finished one race ahead of Max. And really only, had, four podiums. So finished eighth in the championship. And then, obviously, Liam Lawson, two races, 0% of races finished in the points. 17th in the championship. Didn't really do much of anything in that car, unfortunately. But that is that's quite the track record for Max. We know how good he is, but man, when you look at side to side versus your teammates, and like once you get a couple of victories under your belt, it's like, hey, I'm going to win most of the time from here on out, which is, it's greatness, man. As much as like I like the guy personally, or wish he was a little bit more, you know, fun for the media, he's GOAT. He's in the GOAT conversation, regardless of how you feel about him. He has to.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's tied with Seb for four right now. But, like, it's interesting. The only two seasons that really count here for me are the last season with Danny Ric and the, that second one with Checo. And even then, the second one with Checo is, he finished, like, almost, 300 points behind Verstappen in second place, something crazy. That was like the most dominant season of all time. But the last season with Danny Ric was like probably the closest he had to competitive teammates where that was like actually pushing him, and he still pretty well took it to Ricardo at that point. I know that that was kind of a crazy season. They had some like reliability stuff. There was that race in Baku where Danny Ric crashed into the back of Max because he like, I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And it took them both out. That was pretty. That was pretty amazing. But like, he's never had a teammate other than maybe that one season with Ricardo that he was even like on par pace wise, race pace wise, qualifying. Like, yeah. I know he still kind of trounced Ricardo in qualifying, but maybe that was like Danny Ric's prime ish, and or maybe start of his downturn. I don't know. And Max was finally coming into his own that season. I would love to see, I don't know, what are they, clone Max and put him against himself in the second car? Like, something like that. There's got to be another driver on the grid that likes a sharp car. But I just, the thing that really stuck out to me, I read something on the race, and it was a pretty interesting thought, but, like, this feels, from Red Bull's side, kind of like a panic button move, because everything they've done to try to make the car faster has theoretically made it faster, but also made it harder to drive. So, and they went into much smarter detail than I can elaborate on right now. But if they don't drastically change the car quickly to make it easier for multiple people to drive, this is like the beginning of the end for Red Bull, because they've already lost a bunch of key staff because they were winning. So they get lured, their staff gets lured away to other teams. Like, oh, we'll pay you a bunch of money to come here and help us win. But if they don't make a pretty drastic change, like kind of you were talking about earlier, like they're in danger of losing one of the greatest drivers of all time already.
Yeah, it's there's a lot of things about this that like make you think about the way Formula One works, right? Like I went down a rabbit hole in the last few days because Max is obviously, you know, it took him a few years to get to the point of dominance, right? Like probably in the like 60 to 90 races range before he started just completely dominating everything. And he was the youngest driver ever when he started, followed by a young Canadian by Lance Stroll as the second youngest driver ever on the grid. Lance Stroll has like 170 some odd starts, and he's only a year and a half older than Yuki. I think about like if you put any of these drivers in the car at 17 and some change like Max was, do they get to that level that Max is at now, regardless of the car they're in, regardless of their teammates, regardless of their team? Because I feel like without the, I'll caveat that by saying without the like nepotism of having your dad run the team, right? Like part of that just makes your life easier and it's just how it is, where like I really do think that if you have these guys in a Formula One car at 16, 17 years old for 20 plus races a season, you know, X amount of qualifying, X amount of sprints, X amount of practice days, the pure experience at that young age gives you such an advantage in most cases that I think you become, I'm not trying to take away from Max's is just like natural skill. But I do think that part of why he's grown his skill so much, regardless of Red Bull's choices and how they make the car faster or how they, you know, move forward with, you know, improvements, it really is like kind of a no-brainer that like if these guys were in the car at that age and had the chance to drive that pinnacle level car longer than anybody else, it would make sense that they're going to reach higher heights than anybody else, right? And I think Max is the perfect example of that. And I wonder like what we're going to look at in the future if we're going to get younger guys, right? Like this year we've got all these young guys, but none of them are as young as Max was when he first got into Formula One. And you know, like Max definitely wasn't like the driver to beat his first year, but I think the trajectory has always just been going skyrocketing for Max. And there's only been a few times where I remember when we first started the pod, we would have that conversation of like, is Max ever going to get over himself and not be the guy that just runs into somebody into the corner just to be aggressive? And then when he did, he won what, 18 out of 22 races or something, you know, it's like, well, he figured it out, you know? And then you look at it and he's, you know, I don't know, 20, 24, 25 right now. So like if he wants to race for another 15 years, he probably could.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, he could easily go to 40. Like we see Lewis and Fernando still performing at a pretty high level in there. Lewis is like 39 and Fernando's what, 43, 44, something like that. I would push back though that on like your point to being him getting into Formula One so early and having that time to build up, of course he's going to be that good. All these drivers have been behind a wheel, not the wheel, but behind a wheel since they were 10, 6, yeah. 8, whatever. They've been in karting and they've been in the junior formulas working their way up. So they've all been getting that seat time. Granted, it's a different beast in Formula One, but you just said Lance Stroll came in super young too. He's been around almost 10 years now, and he has not exactly flourished into the Max-like driver that we all think.
That's my pushback on it is like you're racing for your dad's team. You don't have to be the most dominant driver out there. Like you're never worried about your seat going away. The seat is yours until you decide, hey, Dad, I don't want to drive anymore. Right? Like that's our assumption, right? We don't know that, but like with Max, you know, like with anybody else, really, like they don't have that guaranteed seat unless they perform at the level. You know, what do you think a guaranteed seat is? Like top six or higher finishing? You know, anybody below that, there's always the chance that you might just get booted for the next younger guy or the old vet from the other team who wants to make a change, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, in the case of like Hamilton wanting to go Ferrari, they were like, all right, peace, Carlos, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Like not having that pressure, but also like to Max's credit, and this might be a bad analogy, but like he has like a Kobe like quality about him where he like races professional sim racing for fun on the weekends.
yeah.
Like, and he's dominating that too, right? He's doing like these 24-hour races with his team Redline and they're winning those. Like international competitions.
Yeah.
So, like, he's just got a weird drive to him, for lack of a better term, that, like, sets him apart from everybody else. Because you see Lando and George and Albon and whatever, and they're out kind of partying when they're not racing, right? Yeah. They're living the Playboy lifestyle that we all think Formula One drivers should be, right? And Max is just like, I'm going to go home and play with my stepdaughter and sim race.
Yeah. And I'm really, I know I just hear Aaron in my mind. He's just hating on me because I sound like I'm hating on Max. I'm not trying to take away from Max's greatness with this conversation. I'm trying to say that, like, Max's greatness is like exponential already. And then it's like doubly exponential, you know, on top of that, because he started so young. So the fifth youngest driver to ever drive a Formula One car is Lando Norris. He started almost 2 years to the day after Max did. But, like, he's definitely not, I think he's in trajectory. He's probably about three and a half behind Max in, like, greatness, right?
That's a really good comparison. Because, like, Max joined Red Bull at a time when they were struggling.
Yeah.
And Lando joined McLaren at a time when they were struggling, and they've kind of grown together up with the team, with the car development, and we're starting to see the fruits of that with Lando also now.
Yeah, and I don't I'm just thinking, like, you know, thinking scientifically, as little as I know about science, it seems like if you could get a guy, and I'm not taking away from any other racing or any of the other, you know, racing that these guys get to do to get to this level, but the pressure of being a Formula One driver at 17 years old. Like, I was just trying to wake up to get to high school. You know, like, I was just trying to make sure I got my driver's license. You know, like, that like shapes your brain and everything so much. Like, I feel like it's almost like Marvel X-Men, like, juicing you up because you're so young and at the top level of, like, there's no nothing on the face of the planet that is faster reaction speed, that is more, you know, like, I don't know, maybe flying, you know, jets or something, but, like, you're not going to do that 5 times a week. You know, you're going to do that once in a while, and you're going to be in a simulator the rest of the time.
They're, like, not going to give you, like, an F-15 when you're 17, right?
Yeah, exactly. To go
fight in a war with.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But, like, it's just crazy to think how young he was. And then, like, I'm relating that to circle back to Yuki. Yuki's, you know, Ben, he has a lot of experience for such a young guy. And it's unfortunate that, like, he hasn't had the chance at Red Bull until this moment. But honestly, like, I don't know, maybe that's for the best. You know, maybe 2 seasons into his racing, he would have just kicked the bucket at Red Bull and, you know, been out. But now, like, you have a chance to prove something on a huge scale. Probably no more eyes than there's no time in your career where there are more eyes on you than this moment, because it's such a hot topic around Formula One. And I think he's been able to grow his fan base over the last couple of years, where, like, we were like, he's a little hothead, this guy's great, I just love him already. I think like him and his relationship with Pierre helped, him and the back and forth with Danny Ricciardo helped. So, like, now I feel like a few years into his career, he's got a pretty good sized fan base even outside of Japan. But in Japan, you know, he's not like Otani levels, but he is definitely, like, on the billboards out there. You know, you see him getting his money. So
yeah, for sure.
I'm excited for him to have that opportunity. And hopefully, man, I just hope he gets, I hope he does well, man. I'm like, now I'm starting to stress about it as I'm thinking about it.
Yeah. Yeah. The last point, I think, kind of what you were saying to earlier, like, Mercedes right now has a really good chance to do with exactly what you just talked about. Like, Mercedes is not necessarily in a downturn, but kind of, like, falling off the pinnacle a little bit. But they got young Kimi in there. And if they stick to him and give him the time to develop as a racing driver and build up with the team as they build back up, hopefully, like, we're looking at, like, potentially another, you know, 4 or 5 years down the line, another Max in the making, potentially, right? He's got all the accolades. He's got the quickness. We see he's performing decently well for being a rookie in a car that's a little bit all over the place. but they're performing, and you know, we can see that it's fast in the hands of George. So like, if Mercedes does what Red Bull did and give Max the time to develop and mature as a driver, like, we're looking at another potential Max down the line. That was my only. But yeah, that being said,
just to say, like, the list I was looking at for youngest drivers, Kimi was not on there because he hadn't driven yet, but he would technically fall into, like, I think third on the list based on his age, 18 and some odd months. So like, yeah, he's right there with Lando and Max in terms of like getting like a really early start, but also, like, you know, to Max's credit, being so much better than everybody, right? Like a year plus earlier than his nearest competitor, he was in a Formula One car. You know, that is like mind-blowing.
So much so that they changed the rule after Max.
Yeah.
Like, you can't be a 17-year-old Formula One driver anymore. It's like against the rules.
It's like Kevin Garnett in the NBA. You know, like drafting out of high school. Oh no, you can't do that anymore. Well, technically LeBron, I guess, was when they changed it, but LeBron and Carmelo.
Yeah. So like we did earlier and compare Max to his teammates, I found an article comparing Yuki up until this season and to his teammates. So we're just going to run through that real quick, and then we'll talk about probably more about Yuki because he's awesome. So Tsunoda came into F1 in 2021 in the, what were they at that point? Not Toro Rosso, AlphaTauri, that short-lived clothing brand.
I wonder if they're still around.
I think the clothing brand is still around, but they like really tried to rebrand Toro Rosso into like a fashion house, kind of like the colors of Benetton back in the day. And they actually had some cool clothes, I'm not going to lie.
Yes, they did. They definitely did.
But it was also like $130 for a t-shirt or something, which is too rich for my blood. Anyway, Yuki came into F1 in the 2021 season against Gasly in the AlphaTauri. And this is probably the only time I would say that Yuki really, you know, got one put on him. Faster in qualifying, it was 31-10 in the time, in his time with against Gasly. Gasly finished ahead 21-8. Laps led, 1,300 versus 723. And then the share of the points, Gasly had 133 to Yuki's 40. Fast forwarding a bit, I think that was, what, two and a half seasons, I want to say, with Gasly. And then we fast forward a bit to a short-lived career again in Nyck de Vries against Yuki. Out of the 10 races together, Nyck was only faster in qualifying twice against Yuki's 8. Nyck only finished ahead twice versus Yuki's 7. I think that math doesn't math, but I think it's because it was a mechanical failure on Yuki's once. Laps led, Nyck was ahead 84 laps versus Yuki's 476, and then points scored 0 for Nyck and 2 for Yuki that season, which in that car was pretty amazing considering it's a boat.
I also forgot that the only reason that it ended up being Nyck de Vries is because Colton Herta didn't have enough points to get his
super license. Yep,
which is insane.
And also Nyck de Vries was coming off of winning the Formula E championship, so he was like no slouch. It's so crazy how we have drivers and we always talk about like the 20 best drivers in the world, and then we have these drivers that are really successful in other racing series come into Formula One, and it's like they just can't function. So and then we go on to Yuki versus Denny Rick. In their time together, Denny Rick was faster in qualifying 9 times to Yuki's 16. Denny Rick finished ahead 9 times to Yuki's 12. Laps ahead, Denny Rick was in the lead 430 laps versus Yuki's 888. And then points scored Denny Rick 18 to Yuki's 37. And then lastly, which is kind of the topic for this whole thing, we have Yuki versus Liam Lawson. When Lawson took over Denny Rick's, when he broke his hand, and then at the end of the season when they let him go for after Singapore. So Liam Lawson was, out of their 11 races together, I should say, Liam was faster in qualifying once to Yuki's 10. He finished ahead four times to Yuki's 5, so that's pretty even. Laps ahead, 108 to Yuki's 358, and then points scored, Liam had 6 to Yuki's 8. So probably his most competitive teammate amongst the lot, other than his rookie year with Gasly, which I think was just growing pains for Yuki.
Yeah, I wonder if we have any like really like statisticians out there. I wonder how the laps ahead, there's got to be some like analytical way to look at laps ahead versus final positions and almost make some sort of like points under pressure kind of like stat that would be really cool for Formula One. You know, like Liam Lawson finishing ahead four times versus Yuki 5, but then when you look at the laps ahead, Lawson was only beat him on laps 108 times out of, you know, and Yuki had 358. So 76% of the time Yuki was ahead in laps, but only finished ahead, you know, one race out of 9, which is kind of insane.
Yeah, yeah, I understand what you're saying, kind of like the weight of those laps ahead, how much does it actually count for, right?
Yeah.
Is that, does Liam only have X amount of laps ahead because of, like, pitting and different pit strategies?
Yeah, or exactly. Like, how do those play into it?
When were they actually racing against each other for positions, right? Like, that's where it counts, right?
Yeah.
But I think the biggest one is really, the one that always sticks out to me is the qualifying, right? Because there's so many factors that go into a race that the qualifying thing is really, obviously there's outliers there, you know, you run into traffic, somebody impedes you, there's yellow flags, stuff like that. But like that stuff kind of balances it out, and you'll see over a long sample of races who really is the faster driver. I mean, obviously at least over one lap, but it tends to lean or learn itself out to be true in the race also.
Yeah, man. I don't know. Like, this is going to be really interesting. I wonder what happens after, you know, like, is Red Bull so desperate to have points to keep Max around, you know, like, understandably so. If Max really does have an out clause that says, hey, if the team doesn't finish in the top 5 or 4, whatever it is, then he can dump the contract and move on to somebody else. Like, this is the year for that to happen if George's contract is actually up with Mercedes. Because if Max goes to Mercedes right now, he'll potentially win, you know, probably, like, you know, who knows? But, like, he'll be competitive. He'll have a second driver that's competitive. We already know that Kimi Antonelli is probably one of the better rookies out there right now. And it's kind of crazy to think that, like, if you're Red Bull, like, what lengths do you go to keep Max in that seat moving forward? Probably insane amounts. Probably, like, if Yuki sucks it up this next few races, I wouldn't be surprised if they put somebody else in there, right? Like, because they also have, they also have the Honda partnership ends at the end of this season, right? And Ford comes in. So, like, they have to have a competitive car for that. They have to go into that on a high, in my opinion, for that partnership to, you know, and with Max, I should say, for that partnership to make sense. You know, like, Ford didn't hop in with Red Bull thinking Max is not going to be at Red Bull, is what I'm getting at. You know, they signed those deals a year or two ago, whenever that was, to almost 2 years ago now, because Max was winning championships and they saw that Max was going to win championships with Red Bull, in my opinion. Which, you know, that's I don't know. Like, I guess I understand the, oh shit, 2 races, he's got to go after I start talking about that and thinking about it.
But doesn't it show, to me, it almost screams like they don't know what they're doing. Like, they're just like, oh my God, we got it super wrong. This just tells me that they got it wrong in the preseason and they should have put Yuki in the car and then given Liam more time to develop in the junior team, right?
Well, Todd, we're not living in an era where
the truth matters.
Where wealthy white men admit their wrongdoings. Like, let's just leave it at that.
Okay, I have a question for you though. Okay, so the car's going bad, the teammates aren't working out. Do you think that at any point the discussion is, if they keep Christian Horner on or not, to keep Max on. Because we know famously
absolutely
that Christian Horner is not well loved amongst the Verstappens. I think Max gets on with him fine, but his dad obviously hates Christian Horner and has been publicly campaigning against Christian Horner since the whole thing. Well, it probably even before the whole dick pic incident last year.
Yeah.
But he was very vocal during that time, too. You think they are even that's on the table for the Red Bull board?
I think Helmut Marko is going to do everything in his power to keep Max as a Red Bull driver. And I don't think that anybody is safe from that other than Max, his dad, and Helmut Marko himself.
You think they're going to get somebody that brought a team 8 world championships, get rid of him? When drivers, like, Max isn't going to be around forever.
Max should outlast Christian Horner.
Will he, though? He could easily just be like, I'm bored of this. I'm going to go do WEC. Well, just because he's a weirdo.
I'd become a super fan of Max if he goes to WEC and races endurance cars, because that to me is like the most beautiful of racing. Like, I love Formula One, but like sports car racing with all the different varying levels of cars on the track, it's completely different in completely different skill set. And it's also more, I think, more appreciative of like race cars in general, right? Like, in Formula One, you're a race car driver because you drive Formula One cars. In endurance racing, WEC, World Endurance Challenge, like, you race because you love racing. And you will sit in any car you can, and you'll race prototype cars all the way down to, you know, Porsche Cup cars at the end of your career if you have to, because you just fucking love racing, which is what Max is. And I think that's more true to his direction. I say that knowing that, like, the only thing that's going to push Max out of Formula One is his dad. Like, at some point, he's going to just get sick of his dad being all on the radio, all on the videos, dancing, you know, like the puffy Suge Knight thing from BET back in the day, right? Like, Joss, I get into it with the guys on the Discord. Joss Verstappen just speaks too much for having a son that is the most dominant race car driver of this decade. Like, you should not be chirping behind the scenes. You should let your son win as many fucking championships as he is going to right now without being any stress to him, because he's already proven that it's not you that got him there. Yes, leaving him on the side of the road might have worked when he was 12 or whatever that story is. But, like, Max has become his own man in the Netflix era of Formula One. The most difficult time of Formula One racers' careers is right now, in my opinion, because they have to do all of this media shit. And I know, like, I am always critical of him because he doesn't play that game well. But I think of all this stuff from a marketing perspective. As a driver, he should just be able to go out there and drive and win as many races as he can and as many championships as he can, because he's in his prime right now. And he has, if not the best car, the very close to the best cars on the track. If anything that pushes him away from the sport and in away from being, you know, an 8 or a 9 or a 10 time champion, it's just going to be that he gets sick of his dad being all in his business behind the scenes. Because ultimately, like, to your point, Christian Horner is a successful team manager, team principal. I don't think there's any, like, I don't think any of us really like the guy, but, like, there's nobody that's going to argue that he is not good at what he does, because he's out there doing it. He's done it with multiple drivers. He went from a nobody team, became a winning team. Like, it's proven success. So for me, if you're a championship driver, yes, you want to drive with your, you know, favorite team, your favorite team principal, blah, blah, blah. But, like, at the end of the day, you want to win, right? So, like, you might not be a super fan of Christian Horner, but also, like, to change to another team that doesn't have a car as good as Red Bull necessarily, Mercedes, right? Toto's a proven championship team principal, owner, whatever. Great. But, like, there's going to be a couple of years learning curve for Max to go to Mercedes and win again. But so what's the point in Joss Verstappen or anyone else, Helmut Marko, whomever, arguing against Christian Horner? Like, to me, it doesn't make sense, even though I don't really like him as a human being. Like, I do see that, like, the winning formula doesn't necessarily have to be broken up because the first two races of the year went bad for your second driver. Like, this year, what, like, Max is like fourth in the points. It's not like it's like the end of the world. Didn't he start last year or the year before, like, with DNFs? Like, it's being blown out of proportion in a lot of ways, but I also think that's because you have all this narrative of Jos Verstappen talking bad about Christian Horner for the last couple of years, the dick pic gate, whatever, you know, like all the things that are going against them, which is why I also say, like, it's the hardest time to be a Formula One driver. You've got drama everywhere. And it's just like one of those things where I feel like remove as much of that as possible. And if removing dad's, you know, microphone in the background of every race or, you know, whatever it is, he's the best driver out there. He should be able to just win like year after year for a few years right now, still, in my opinion, regardless of the car, even almost, you know, give him an 80% of the way there car and he typically wins. Why don't they do that? You know, like, there's got to be other things behind the scenes that are really like getting under people's skin, right?
Yeah. No, it's interesting that you still think that Red Bull has a top car, because I think right now I'd probably put them fourth.
Behind Mercedes, too?
Yeah. I just look at what George has done. He's second in the championship over the course of the two races in the sprint, right? So, like, granted, Kimi's had struggles a little bit, but I think that's just, you know, rookie growing pains. I would put it McLaren. Probably McLaren, either Ferrari or Mercedes. Those are kind of, you could swap either in there for two and three. And then I'd put Red Bull fourth amongst the top teams. And the only reason they're in the conversation is because of Max. So I just think it's an interesting question to pose, because if Yuki jumps in there and, God forbid, does what Liam does and is, you know, P17, P20, whatever, two races in a row where he's starting from the pit lane because he was so far off the pace and breaking Park Ferme to make changes to try to help that. It's just, then it starts to be a little bit more of a panic button, because I think, like you said, like, all bets are off to keep Max, but also from what I can tell, it seems like Christian Horner has his, you know, fingers around this team pretty tight. So I don't know. I don't know if he's got enough sway to outlast Max. But I think they also, just in general, treat drivers pretty disposable in Formula One.
Yeah.
A recent example is...
Especially Red Bull, right? Like, they're kind of notoriously the most treat drivers disposable, I guess.
Yeah, and then, like, we look at Mercedes recently. Lewis just wanted to, like, set himself up for the future with the ambassador deal, like, post-Mercedes. Yeah. And they wouldn't even give him that. He wanted, I think, a small ownership stake in the team and then, like, a contract for, I don't even remember what the number was, but contract through 20, basically like a 10-year contract to be an ambassador.
Yeah.
After, and he's won them 8 championships. There's a reason people even know what AMG Petronas is, and that's Lewis Hamilton. And they wouldn't give him that. And now he's racing in red because of that.
So devil's advocate to that thought, is it possible that, you know, that Mercedes just hasn't had winning drivers, enough, like, really truly dominant winning drivers to understand the lifetime value of drivers sticking with the team? Because I think of, like, Ferrari and Schumacher, right? And, you know, up until his accident, like, he was still, it didn't really matter who was in the car, he was still the face of Ferrari for a lot of people, right? And I'm wondering if Ferrari kind of had Ferrari would be the only team really that would have that kind of advantage in a way to, like, understand that dynamic of, like, post-career contracts. I know that drivers get hired for all sorts of roles with teams, but what Lewis was asking for specifically, the only example I can think of is actually Michael Schumacher and Ferrari. Like, he had, like, a long-term partnership with them beyond his racing career, right? Even though he went back to Mercedes, he was still representing Ferrari in like advertising and stuff, wasn't he?
I think somewhat, yeah. But, like, I think that was his little snit with Mercedes before his accident.
Maybe
I don't think it was like a signed ambassador contract. The most recent thing I can think of is the Mercedes deal with Lauda. Like, Nicky was, which is funny because he didn't even race for Mercedes.
Yeah.
Back then, but, like, he became, like, an ambassador role and, like, a mentor to Lewis, and they really, like, put that out there. And like when Lauda, Niki Lauda passed away, like they did a really big thing for Niki at Mercedes. So I think they understand the importance of it, which is even more perplexing why they didn't give it to Lewis, who is the winningest driver of all time and, you know, one of the GOATs, or at least in the conversation for the greatest of all time, amongst Schumacher, amongst Senna, amongst Max. You know, it's an interesting question, but I think if we, God forbid, we see Yuki start to struggle, I think we start to see panic buttons a little bit. And this is kind of a tangent, but this is having a waterfall effect down the grid, where now the rumors are that after this move has happened, now the rumors are Jack Doohan might be replaced in Alpine after Suzuka, so they can put Colapinto in that car because they don't want to lose Colapinto to Red Bull.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, again, unfair. Not that Liam Lawson's axing was fair, but
yeah.
Like, I don't think Doohan's been struggling that, like, he's definitely been struggling, but not to the point of lining up in not taking starts from the pit box.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's an interesting domino effect that, yeah. Just to correct that too, like, I was wrong. Schumacher didn't have like an official partnership with Ferrari afterwards. It was just based on, from what I can see, it was just based on like specific,
ad campaigns or something.
Appearances or campaigns, yeah.
Yeah.
Because they did like a watch thing, I think, a couple years after he retired from racing. But yeah, like, it's crazy. Also, like, I didn't realize that like there was a kind of like some updates on him that came out yesterday, where basically like he just unable to, I mean, kind of all the stuff we knew, but like he's unable to speak. He has about his like caregivers basically doing everything for him, and only has about 15 or 20 people that have access to him. So, but man, sad stuff.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's crazy to think that you drove 200 plus miles an hour for X amount of years and then had a skiing accident, and like that's the thing that slowed you down.
He was notorious too. In the off season, he would do all sorts of wild shit, skydiving and base jumping and whatever. He was just like an adrenaline junkie. It's so crazy.
Yep.
But I mean, I guess you lived the life and got after. I feel bad for his family going through all that. Yeah. But yeah, it's nuts. Yeah, man,
it's crazy. All right. So parting thoughts on Yuki. Where's he gonna finish in Japan?
I'm gonna go downside upside. I think he's gonna qualify something like 12th. And I think he'll finish 10th or 9th in the race.
All right. I was going to say he's going to qualify. He's going to barely get into P1. He'll qualify 10th. And then I think in the race, he's going to finish a couple spots up. I'm going to go with 8th.
Okay. All right. I'm going to leave you with this. And my prediction is that a Ferrari driver is actually going to win the world championship this year. And that is because we take a trip back to 2003. This is proof that we're living in a simulation. I'm going to compare the first two races of 2003 to the first two races of 2025. Season opener in 2003, a British McLaren driver wins the race. Schumacher's record world drivers constructor streak ends. Ferrari scores 5 points. German Sauber driver scores points. A Canadian driver finishes in the top 10. An Italian driver finishes in the top 5. Second race, there's a first-time pole sitter. McLaren driver wins again. Standings, McLaren opens the season with back-to-back wins. McLaren drivers leading the World Drivers' Championship is the only one with podiums in both races. Lead McLaren driver has 56 laps led. Reigning driver's champ is 8 points behind the lead McLaren driver. 2025, exactly the same. British McLaren driver wins. Mr. Verstappen's record World Drivers' Championship streak ends. Ferrari scores 5 points. German Sauber driver scores points. Canadian driver finishes in the top 10. Italian driver finishes in the top 5. It goes on and on and on. It's exactly the same. This is all a simulation.
This is why we need like an analytics expert on the show with us, or at least somebody we can reach out to and be like, what is the statistical probability of this happening? Like, is this like a one in a million thing, or is this just a weird way of Formula One fans being like, hey, this random cool thing happens 20% of the time, so I'm going to put it out there in an interesting moment, and now we're all like conspiracy theorists that we're all in a simulation.
I think these stats crack me up because it's so like cherry picked. Granted, what are the chances of that being exactly the same?
Yeah.
But like most of the drivers are British. Like,
yeah.
Sauber's had a bunch of German drivers. Like, it's just funny that we have the stats that they try to pull out in baseball or football all the time.
Yeah.
It's like
this guy will throw a no hitter if he only pitches one inning after 7 p.m. on a Thursday. He had popcorn for breakfast, a protein bar for lunch, and a burrito for dinner. Exactly. Otherwise, he sucks.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But all right. Yeah, you book it.
Yeah.
Ferrari World Drivers Champion.
That's a strong statement. We're going to have to hear from our resident Ferrari fan, Rohit, when he gets back. I was going to attempt to give him an OnlyFans name, but I'm just going to skip right past that and say thanks for listening, watching. If you're not in the Discord, get in there and have these conversations with us between the races. We'll catch you on the next one. Thanks for supporting us. Peace.